Welcome to the Ivy Podcast. We're just two aunties sharing our experience through the lens of one Blackfoot woman and one Anishinaabe woman. And we are Indigenous Vision, an educational nonprofit based in Montana and Arizona. We are 100% Indigenous-led, and this is our podcast. Check us out at indigenousvision.org to learn more about our work, make a donation, or play back any of our radio shows and this episode.
Welcome to the Indigenous Vision Podcast. You are officially listening to episode 112. My name is Melissa Spence. I am coming to you from the Nuuvi lands, or Southern Paiute lands, of Las Vegas. I'm here with our Executive Director of Indigenous Vision, Suta Collinglast. How the F are you?
Oh my goodness. Well, there's hard days and easy days, and today's like more on the hard day, but it's like mentally and emotionally, I feel like I'm having an easy day about it. So I've got this really good blessing today of like having a hard challenges at work, navigating. I'm falling behind talking to people, and sometimes I feel bad because I'm like a bad friend, you know? I don't call girlfriends enough and be like, let's hang out or let's go for a hike. And then even when I do like to hike, I like to go by myself. I'm such a hermit to a fault. And I think people get upset sometimes about it and I feel bad. Mm-hmm. But I fall behind on like work conversations too. I know this week, like I had a really fast week last week. I got a last minute presentation that actually fit in because Tuesdays and Thursdays are completely booked solid. I don't have a Tuesday or Thursday aside from our normal things we're doing. And then I filled my afternoons until the middle of May. It's like craziness. And so Mondays and Wednesdays are better for me. But it's just crazy schedules that I'm trying to stay up with. But I got asked to do this presentation in Canada on the Crown of the Continent managers, land managers. And so the national parks were there, all of these wonderful organizations like the Nature Conservancy Canada. I don't know if the Nature Conservancy from the US side was there, but I think they had some representatives, maybe lots of Montana government people and Alberta government people. And we're all talking about the projects we have going on to manage the land. And so I got to talk about the Blackfoot place map and give them something a little different, which was requested of me, you know, the non-typical environmental conservation project. And so our work deals a lot with environmental cultural conservation. And so I go from environmental protection at the stance of protecting the home of Tsleil-Waututh, and those are water people. And then also protecting the culture and preserving culture by ensuring that it has the biodiversity and the quality of water needed to practices. My phone is also ringing off the hook. See, and I feel bad that I'm not able to keep up with people. And so if you're calling right now, I'm sorry. I will try to call you back if I don't forget. And I know one of the moms at school got mad at me. I think she got upset and never responded to my text because I got her text at a weird hour and I was so tired and out of it that I forgot to respond for like a week. I finally responded and I think she decided she didn't want to be my friend. But
oh yeah. Well,
busyness. It's been busy, but good busy. I went to go see the Every Child Matters exhibit at the Galt Museum, and it was situated in a forest, which I thought was super symbolic and really precious to put our children's names and all of the stories in an aspen forest, because I really like the way aspen forests connect and communicate within each other as one being. So it was really spooky. And then I also thought of like, I don't know if you're like a true crime fan or just a horror fan. There's a forest in Japan that's called the Forest of the Dead, where everybody goes to unalive themselves. And this is the feeling that that exhibit gave to me, is it had a lot of energy of sorrow and grief and death. And it was really hard to walk through. And it was definitely triggering just thinking of my child. And my upbringing and the people I was surrounded by and the struggles that they went through, and my parents and grandparents and all the people in my family who survived and didn't survive. We have a couple of stories on the Blackfeet side of families who didn't survive the residential schools and boarding schools. So went to a community panel after that, which was on elders, focusing on elders' strength from healing from the residential school. So, and I didn't know what it would be about. I just needed to drop this shower filter off with an elder. And I was like, are you home? And he's like, nope, at the school, drop it here. And so I'm like, drop by, and the elders are sitting there, and then they're passing around the microphone about everything that they did to keep their mental strength and spiritual wellness after surviving, and then continuing to watch their family members and children even go through these systems and struggling with it. But mental and spiritual wellness was the focus of that. And I found myself like in a conference of healers and healthcare professionals. I think it was a social work, tribal social worker conference with the elders panel. And then my son's father decided to be upset with me. And that kind of like threw like a stick in the tire of like feeling good tends to happen. And so I tried to keep my own spiritual and mental health and wellness about my own situation and all of that stuff. And so it was like hard, and then there was some relief, and then it got hard again. And then I went to the film festival, and there was no Blackfoot land acknowledgement at the beginning of the films, which was like super upsetting. And I was like, oh, they didn't say it. It was like, welcome to the traditional homelands of the Salish and Kootenai people. And I think they might have included Nez Perce in there. And I'm like, dude, we are
like
literally
far.
1 mile away from a significant site and war camp that was continuously occupied. And so I made this post, and I didn't think it would just, you know, I thought it would just be me ranting, and my regular 12 awesome people who think the same way would like it and be like, yeah. It was a little bit more than that. It was,
wow.
It got like 200 likes and like 125 shares. And it made me feel incredible that 125 people felt enough passion, motivation, and encouragement to also be like, this is so beautiful. This is awesome. This makes me so proud to be Blackfoot. And I feel like I did my job for the year, just making 100 Napis feel good to be Blackfoot and feel good to have that identity beyond the reservation line in an area that where we were like traditionally historically active but had been removed from. And there's like this really aggressive effort to unnarrate us out of the land. And I don't know if it's tribal politics or like modern intertribal warfare, or archaeologists are just picking their favorite Indian in their tribe and being like, no, this is this person, or this belongs to this person. But I think it's a loss to humanity if, even if I don't tell the truth about a place and say, oh, this is Blackfoot, and you know, assume it and claim it, and then completely write out all the other narratives of why that place was important. I think it does a disservice to the place, and it's just not a cool thing to do to humanity. It's literally burning down a library or locking the doors to one when you do that. And so I hope if other nations and women and people in capacity of working with me and my projects are listening to this, like, I don't seek to claim it as the only story. Like, whoever shares a story with me about a place or whatever evidence is found there, I don't seek to make it the only story, because I know that's not realistic. It's not the way land works, and it's not the way spirits of the land work. They present themselves to many people, and many tribes have shared sacred places and have battled for them. And so I think all perspectives should be included when we're speaking about the land, because that could only help to better navigate the future and all of the chaos that we are probably going to face together, right?
Mm-hmm. I love how you just spoke your truth. That's so crazy.
Isn't that like, and that's me, like, people always want to have me fight for them. And I always try to fight for getting along, if that makes sense. And so, because I don't like tension. I don't like violence. And I think that that disrupts an energy when you go out there. I think that interrupts like whatever message that you're, or whatever spirit or healing that you're trying to do when you're out there in the land. Like there's places that can literally cause miracles and healing, but we have to go out there in the right mind with the right heart, and that these things will speak to you easier when you open yourself up compared to if you muddle your mind. Like I'll use myself as an example. If my mind is all muddled with what's happening personally with me, and then like the many projects we have, and all of the 16 people that I have to reach out to for those projects, it's going to interrupt the message of whatever spirit or knowledge is needing to get out of that land or water that I'm asking for permission to hear. And so you have to situate yourself in the right mind, just like those elders said, is it's really important to hold on to that mental spirituality, the mental stability and wellness, as well as the physical wellness and stability, because those work together in tying your mind and body together. You're more likely to walk in your truth and not be shaken up too easily. But you had a really profound book come to your desk on truth telling.
Right. I am all about that. And thanks for sharing, because I just had a vision of you walking into that elder space and it just kind of like perfectly aligning with everything that's happening and those messages on how to stay, I guess, sturdy in your footing when you're navigating these unprecedented times, which is what I've really been focusing on, especially the past 2 weeks. I don't know if it's like my moon time that just really threw me into this emotional turmoil because of processing things. I've got family crisis going on. Work was overwhelming physically on my body. Mentally, the world is dragging me down. Like it's just so much going on, right? So I'm reading these books and I'm trying to educate and I'm trying to spend time in a really peaceful state, which is for me is reading and just being alone. And I love it. And I'm reading Bell Hooks is All About Love again, because I felt like I didn't really absorb it the first time because I just wasn't in the right space. And I came across the chapter on truth telling, aka not lying. And it was so profound. It just reinstated my traditional belief and principle from the Anishinaabe way is to let the truth constantly lead you. And I've really been focusing on that in the past year to just be truthful and really be truthful with myself, first of all, with what I am doing and contributing. And just it really opened my eyes to how much as a society we lie as a people. It starts in childhood. We tell these little lies as children to either get attention or keep attention away. We tell lies to keep the peace. We tell so many lies for so many different reasons, and it starts so young and it just snowballs as we get older and older. The withholding of the truth is also a lie, and just how ingrained lying is in the fabrics of our society and how detrimental it is to all of us as a people. And it really made me realize that I am a truth teller, regardless of what the consequences or the outcomes are going to be. Like, I just cannot deviate anymore from the truth. It does a number on my soul. Like, I feel like it damages my spirit when I don't tell the truth anymore, because I just can't live like that. And now when I'm, processing all this information about the world, I'm seeking truth and like everything and trying to educate myself as much as possible. It just really dawned on me on how important it is to, one, stay in the truth and realize that that is the only way to like restore and keep our humanity. And I have to stay away from liars. I just can't do it anymore. I can tell when people are lying. And it is not cool. And I don't know how to keep up the charade of it anymore because I've gone through this process where I'm like, I can't fake it. I cannot fake the funk anymore. I used to be a master at faking the funk to keep the peace. And now I cannot. I have lost that ability to lie my way through the things I need to get what I need, whether it be professionally or personally. And I'm
Well,
really
that's a
having this moment now of like I'm in the truth, and whoever can handle it can stick around, and whoever can't is gonna have to go.
that's very honorable to yourself. I
They
think
don't
it
lose
makes,
friends.
yeah, you do lose friends. Shoot, I post my baby on Facebook. I'm like, oh my gosh, how did those people even become my friends in the first place?
I'm at a point where I can't go back.
It's
Actually, I did it.
strange.
I don't know what to do.
No, you keep going forward. You keep going forward, and that surrounds you with good people. There's always going to be those like quick hit and runs with people who try to manipulate or take advantage and say, oh, this is happening. You need to do this for me or feel
Yes.
sorry for me or feel like, you know, I feel sometimes manipulated by, I don't know what to call them, like emotional vampires, like people who, because I am caring and I will listen and I'll try not to cut you off, you know, and but it, at the same time, I can also, and I don't know, this also goes into like extended family or friends of the family or people I had known and grown up with who are in drug addiction and they, you know, want to be doing good, right? They want to be sober. They want to have, like, they know exactly what you want to hear. And they tell you some version of it. And then you feel like it's not true. And then you feel like they're lying about everything. And it's hard for me to hold those feelings back. I always have to. Sobriety is like a hard one for me because, especially if it doesn't come with changed behavior, then I feel like they're lying, right? Like, because I've always been the family member in AA, learning how to deal with an addicted family member, you know, understanding their rationale for like hurting and violence or, you know, whatever it is. And I still don't understand. I don't understand. I'm surrounded with people like you. My friend Clinton from like my childhood group of friends, he's probably why you're my friend too, is because you two are very much the same in that something happens in your life or you built up to a point in your life and then you're like, you know what? F that. I don't want it anymore. And you two have been individuals who have just been like an overnight, I don't want it anymore. So it's not, it's just not in your life anymore. I've never seen discipline like that or like self-restraint or no excuses or accountability. It's just really amazing things to see. And there's no excusing it, right? Like, you know, one of his was like, he didn't want to drink anymore. And then all of a sudden he didn't, and he just didn't have a struggle with it. And like, you didn't want to eat meat anymore. And then all of a sudden you're vegan for 5 years. And that's like, it takes an incredible amount of strength, belief in yourself to just make those decisions. And then at the same time, on the other hand, I'm dealing with people I love and people that I wish see their potential, want them to be sober too. But they feed me what I want, what they know. I'm doing this, I'm in this treatment, I'm, you know, on this step and everything's going. I have this lined up for me. Something might, I do get fatigued hearing that. I don't want to say I don't want to hear it, but I'm so fatigued hearing what I know is an untruth because I don't know. There's like this spectrum of healing. And this is where we need Leah Wetzel on the podcast because she's awesome at helping people understand addiction. You know, she could probably school me right now on like how to be understanding of it. But I only have the perspective I have, which is of the family member dealing with the crap that's brought home with that addiction, you know, and trying
It's
to deal
different,
with
yeah.
it.
When it's your family, it's really different. Like, especially if you've been going through it for your whole life, for example. Like, I have no patience with some family members when it comes to interacting with them, especially when they are in the addiction itself. I have no patience whatsoever. Like, I just want to hang up, click, walk out the room, or whatever it is, right? Like, I just cannot deal sometimes. So it's hard. It really is. I get it.
But you have to sit there and either nod or be nice or say, oh, come on now. Like this is the you're planning on going to this friend's house right after this house, and what you're telling me does not happen at that friend's house. Like
Yeah.
it's, you know, so like truth telling on that level for me is a big one. And then I don't even get me into dating truth telling or feeling safe with a significant other because it's just, you know, I try not to look for the green flags. Oh, look at that. Was that a Freudian slip?
That
Like, I
was
try not
totally a
to.
slip.
Oh my
Wow.
God. Like,
Wow.
I see. Help me. Oh my goodness.
You know what, the chapter on bell hooks went into that and how men, I hate to say it, are conditioned from young ages to lie. They have to lie so much, and they keep up the gig when it comes to manipulating women to make women like them.
Yeah. I feel really manipulated. People, yeah, and that's another one. It's people have faked being sober, faked being hikers, faked being nice, faked having friends, faked liking people. Like those are just like the people I've dated in the past, and not assigning anything to anyone. You can own it if you want, if you're listening. But and I didn't see the red flags. Like I didn't realize like I'm bombing up these hills trail running, and the guy pretending to like me is like sick with his beer belly like behind me, and I just didn't see those truths right in front of my face, and I just chose to hear what they were saying. I try not to get too hard on myself for believing people and
yeah,
what they say.
That's another thing too, like we can only, I don't know. I feel like I'm becoming too truthful to the point where I'm like, I feel like I'm excommunicating myself from society because there's just so much lies around. Like, I feel like I've drank in too much of the truth Kool-Aid, where I'm at a point where I'm letting it not consume me, but I just see it everywhere. You know, you've seen the movie They Live when he puts on the sunglasses and he sees all like the other people who are controlling the world, and they're like these weird alien heads. I don't know.
I've never seen that before.
Oh my gosh.
That
it's
sounds
like
cool.
He puts on the truth sunglasses and he can see like the world for what it is. And everyone's going along with it without the sunglasses. There's like subliminal messaging to just go along with society, not ask questions, keep the status quo going. Nobody questioned anything. But when you put the sunglasses on, you can see the truth and everything. And that's how I feel now. And I can't take the glasses off, and everyone's still going along with everything. And I'm stuck here like, whoa, 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 whoa. This is really crazy. And yeah, I am the catfishing with potential romantic partners is at an all-time high. Even friendship wise, I've been hanging around with some people in the desert, and like I'm noticing their manipulative patterns as well, that are just ingrained in them. I don't even think they are aware of it, which is really crazy. I just had a really crazy weekend at work, and we had a big situation again where people were just lying. It just really made me think about how much people are not telling the truth, and it's really affecting everything and humanity on a level, on a basic level, and how it all comes down to that. I don't know if I sound really crazy. Again, it's like the world is just making me crazy, I think, and I'm really trying to.
You sound disappointed in humanity.
I am. It's a major disappointment, but I'm still like, I have all these good things happening. We have so many good projects coming up. And luckily, all of these things that we do align with our personal principles and values, right? Like that's literally what's keeping me going. We got the cultural humility trainings coming up. The training with Melanie is like the biggest highlight of my year so far. We've got the Phoenix event, and we have the retreat coming up. So there's all these really great ways that we can share our truths and like stay in that, I guess, element of truth. So that's really good, but I'm struggling with the world.
I think like if we can center it back around like culture humility, maybe what you're seeing is the scripting that everybody is stuck in and not questioning at all. And it's benefited, it's continuing to benefit, right? All of these scripts that we're reenacting when we go see each other and good morning, how's your day? Oh, going good. And there's not even any looking at each other. Like it's just scripting of like, this is what you do when you run into people. And then the same thing on like addiction. Like this is what they want to hear. Just feed them what they want to hear and they'll move on and leave you alone. Like,
exactly.
Maybe it's just scripting and that everybody is on their own journey and that we just have to keep doing this and our journey, and then maybe by sharing our journey and our acknowledgement of like, I don't know what they would be like, structures of lies, of assumptions and institutionalized all of these isms that trickle into our own individual being, maybe it'll get better. But it,
I hope so.
I don't know. I don't know, right?
I know. I mean, it's a lot. It's really a lot when
it's
you've
a
been
lot
critically self-reflecting and like nobody else seems to be doing that.
No, but I think of like, I go back to all those like tribal stories of monster slayers And I feel like now is the time in the world, like it's bubbling up and it's getting bad and it's almost reaching like a breaking point where we're going to need a monster slayer, because we definitely have monsters. And those have come about in time repetitively for Blackfoot people, time and time again. So they'll cycle throughout history, and we forget we're really tiny, dumb human beings, and we don't know what we need to know. And when it's presented right in front of us, we ignore it. Like we're really, really pitiful. And that's what we say in our prayers. Like we have no hair, no claws. We're subjected to the elements. We are at the mercy of our own creativity and ingenuity and strength to put that together. And so we're at a time in the world where everything is pushed to a breaking point. Food systems in the natural environment are collapsing. Birds are getting their magnetic directional influences mixed up because our polar magnetic things are changing directions. Like direct north is not even direct north as what it used to be. And so the world is in a time of significant shift and change. And I think it's really good to just work on our own journeys and try to have support within us and try to talk it out. And there will be like things that we just don't understand and maybe shouldn't work too hard, because I feel like I encountered this when I was much younger and it's a whole different area. But I've had white friends like wake up into the world. And these were specifically the one I'm thinking of came from a highly religious and somewhat abusive white family, poor here in Montana, and learned about spiritualism and racism and how the world treats people of color, like his newfound friends and all of that. And then just like the exposure we get to the world of how the systems work, energy systems, spiritual systems, people interacting with each other from different cultures and religions and our dynamic, and then how we label each other as evil or good and bad, and all of that kind of thing. And I felt like it was too much for him, and he did have a mental breaking point. And so I think there is a way. I always think about him because I loved him. I love this guy, not as a dating and romantic way, but as a friend who was dating my other friend. And we became very close to a guy friend. They're gay. Don't get any assumptions in your brains, listeners. yes, I loved my friend's boyfriend, but they were gay, and I'm not, and I'm a girl. And so, yeah, just to kill any assumptions, because I have been called an HO garden tool before. And
Oh,
I can't get around
goodness.
it. I can't get around it. People see my face and they're like, oh, she's going to steal your man. And I'm like, I don't even know why you want your man. Please leave me alone. It's like, anyway, I saw a breaking point with him. Like it was like a year of coming from his community and his family and his lifestyle and his scripting and being in my friendship and in my circle. And I feel responsible for what I say, especially if I'm talking about, like, I can't even throw around the concept of Blackfoot time and energy and the concept of death and all of these things that take some prep to maybe understand, because I felt responsible for him learning too much too fast. And we can't, and I think about, well, what happens if the whole world just like unlearns too much too fast, and it just, and people, and that's what it feels like. People are at their breaking point where they're just overwhelmed with the BS that's happening interpersonally with what our jobs are expecting from us. If you're a laborer, even if you're at the executive leadership level, like we encounter so many people in our trainings who are tasked by executive leadership and billion-dollar companies with bringing DEI and inclusion into their organizations, but are given no line item and no budget and no raise on top of this emotional labor that they're supposed to do, in essence, bringing their waiting rooms to go back to cultural humility, to bring their waiting rooms in race riots back to a place of peace and calmness. And so I don't know, lying and carrying lying and assumptions and biases that we act on, and then like maintaining the status quo, using all those little lies and all of the things that we do to get along and make it be okay for right now, because that's all we can handle, right?
Yeah. I don't necessarily feel like I'm at a breaking point. I'm just at a point of, like you said, extreme disappointment in other people, which is nothing new, really. I mean, I've been disappointed by my peers throughout my whole life, you know, people I went to school with, people I've worked with, but it's just, I feel like it's on a global level now. But I am at the same time, I'm still hopeful. I'm still really excited about a lot of the things that I have coming up. But it's just, I have to, it's a daily practice to try and like not let it get overwhelming and still do the work and have the physical fitness to do the work well is what I'm kind of struggling with, is to not let it overconsume. Because I know that I'm not going to be able to understand everything, right? Like, beliefs are not truths. There's a lot of crazy beliefs out there. I don't need to know the root of every single belief to try and understand every situation. All I know is that my truth, I've done the critical self-reflection work. I've done the work on myself, and I cannot expect everybody else to do their work. I'm not going to try and hold myself in this weird moral superiority spot of I'm like, I know more. I also have to humble myself in that regard, because I don't know everything and I'm never going to know it all. All I know is what I'm doing. I'm following the truth, and the truth is, in a really harsh but necessary way, setting me free. And I'm like, I've never experienced this before. And it's interesting. It's a lot, but at the same time, it's really wonderful, which is crazy to say, to be wonderfully alive, but like still aware of everything.
All of that beautiful pain. Yeah. But, you know, just to wrap it up, because our listeners, I don't know, pop on 10 minutes and pop off 10 minutes. But I don't remember a time ever in the world where the truth was still a good truth, where entire people and large parts of people and their culture have been wiped away from the earth. There was never a good truth behind that.
No.
And that's also, you know, if you think back to the different times of the beings, you know, there's all different kinds of hominids and humans out there, and a lot of them have gone extinct, and it has been because they have disagreed about who's way and who's right and who's the right human, right? And so humanity has been brutal. I know that our spirits really want something else.
Hey, thanks for checking out the Ivy Podcast. We appreciate your support. If you'd like to go a little further with that support, you can always like, share, or comment to help us through the algorithm. If you want to know more about us, check out our website, indigenousvision.org. We're also on social media, on Facebook at Indigenous Vision and on Instagram at Indigenous Vision Media. You'll find tons of information about our upcoming trainings, some of our upcoming events, and of course, you can always make a donation through our site to keep projects like this going. Once more, that's indigenousvision.org. Thank you so much, and we hope you have a wonderful day.